I'm just going to do some very brief introductions. I think all of us know the good work of these three folks joining us today to offer their perspectives and insights as journalists and people around town. Maze Jackson, political analyst, media personality, morning show on WVON radio. Lots of experience in business, politics, and community engagement. He's also an executive with the Intelligence Group, which is a business on the South Side. Laura Washington, Chicago Sun-Times columnist, ABC7 analyst, also served as the Ida B. Wells Barnett University professor at DePaul University. Lots of work over the years on government affairs, politics, local issues, race, and other social justice issues. And Greg Hines, who is the Crane Chicago business blogger and columnist on politics and government, prize-winning reporter, writes a lot on public policy issues in the context of politics and government in the public sector. So welcome to all of you. All right, so 17 candidates and counting. There are sure to be at least two or three more who jump in. How it all shakes out, we're on the edge of our seats. What does this mean? We had in Mayor Daley, a mayor for many, many years. We had then last round an unexpected runoff with a sitting mayor. And now we have 17 and counting seeking this office to lead our city in some very challenging times. Laura, do you want to just give us your take in a few minutes of opening remarks? And then we'll go through with Mays and Greg, and then we'll get to our questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Anne Marie. I think you hit your good afternoon, everyone. It's an honor to be up here with these two guys.
Those
are my favorite people to watch and keep an eye on.
You can handle yourself.
You really hit the nail on the head in terms of this is a new era. It's a new time. A lot of people are coming up to me and asking me, what do I do? What do I think? Who should I be looking at? And a lot of people are wringing their hands about what does this mean for the city, and we're at a crossroads, and I think it's a fabulous time. I think Rahm Emanuel did the city, and whether you like him or don't like him, he did the city a tremendous service by stepping away at a really crucial time, and also apparently he has not anointed any successors. Now, you never know about that, but on the surface it appears that he is not trying to set up someone. So that means that the city can have a real conversation about his future, about the direction of his future, about what is the right kind of leadership at this time for the city, and that hasn't happened in a very, very long time in Chicago. So in addition to the fact that as a political junkie, I'm just loving all these 17 and 18 and 20 and 25 folks that may be running, I think it's just very exciting time to be in the city, and instead of having an anointing, we'll have a real election. I have a number of points I want to make, but I'll just the only other point I'll make is a big question of the day that everyone's asking me, and I'm sure we all have opinions about this, is, who are the front runners? We've got 17 folks, 12 people that were in the race before Rahm Emanuel made his announcement, and we have to, as you say, two or three more probably to come. That just by setting up that stage, it's clear that there's no front runner because it's just too many people thinking about it and too many people in the race already, and we haven't even had a chance to let the dust settle. So I think there's probably, I wouldn't say there's one front runner, there's probably a series, several front runners in terms of who's in it right now, and I would identify them as Tony Preckwinkle, Bill Daley, Paul Vallis, Gary Chico, for a variety of reasons. Perhaps Lori Lightfoot, depending on how some other things play out. If Chuy Garcia and Susana Mendoza get into it, is there rumor to be seriously considering? They would fall into that category. But I think it's anybody that says there's a front runner and they know who that front runner is, those are the same people that said that they knew that Rahm Emanuel wasn't going to run for re-election. And nobody except his very close inner circle knew that. They all have strengths and weaknesses. Even on the front runner level, they all have wars, they all have controversies in their past, they all have things that they're going to have to bat down. But the one thing I think that a front runner is going to have to prove over and above everything else is that that person has the experience and the skills and the qualifications and the leadership abilities to run a city like Chicago. I think that that's the kind of conversation that we're going to have during this campaign, in addition to a number of many issues, but I think that that's going to be the number one element that's going to decide ultimately who the front runners are.
Thank you, Laura. Before we move on, just a reminder that you have blue question papers at your table. So please, if you have a question, fill out the form. City Club team members will be circulating and bring them up to me. Greg, what do you think about all this craziness?
What I think is two things. Laura is right that there is no front runner. I'd even go beyond that. This is unlike any election probably anyone in this room has seen for mayor. All the old factions have broken down, have split. The old organizations are different. There is no anointed candidate. You have to go back probably sometime before Richard J. Daley to find a race that is more open than this. Anything is possible. 15%, 16% could get somebody into the general, into the runoff. And I could name probably a dozen people who conceivably have a pass to get 15%. So I don't know. Nobody knows. We're on uncharted territory, and we're in the midst of a national environment in which polarization is rampant on both sides of the political spectrum, and the middle is getting smaller and smaller and smaller every year. One group I'm particularly keeping an eye on, and it probably has to do with who I work for, Crane Chicago Business, is what the business community does, because a lot of them are scared to death. The last three mayors, frankly, have had the business community's back on things like minimum wage and regulation, whatever. That's not going to change. And how much it changes is something of great interest to them. If they can pull themselves together and get behind somebody, they could be fairly influential. Whether they're going to be any more successful in getting behind a candidate than any of the other factions out there, who knows? So I said I wanted to say two things. The first is nobody knows what's going to happen. Here's what I'd like to see happen. What I'd like to see happen is for a candidate emerge who can walk the middle balance that this city needs right now. The city doesn't need someone at the far right or the far left. The city needs somebody who can work with all factions and extend to more people the real prosperity that Rahm Emanuel started to bring to parts of the city. And I do mean parts. I give you a couple numbers. Between 2010 and 2017, the number of jobs in Chicago grew almost 17%. That's more than any comparable period, and it puts us at the highest level probably in 30 years. This is state data. Now, that's pushed by what's happening in downtown Chicago. It's up 24%. But there was a recent which is just remarkable. All the problems the city has now in terms of paying for schools, paying off old pension debts, and everything else, if those new jobs hadn't come here, boy, would we really be in trouble above and beyond it. But those jobs have not been evenly distributed. Metropolitan Planning Council did a really interesting study a few months ago that I thought had a couple bumps in it, but it found some things that some other studies have suggested. And it said that certain groups, especially African Americans, are not fully participating in that growth. The job growth has been mostly in among white college-educated folks and to a much lesser degree among black people, even with college degrees, and Latinos with college degrees. Another survey last week was done for Melissa Harris, the political consultant, where they broke it down by neighborhood, and they found some absolutely fascinating stuff. The question was, would you recommend to a friend or a relative living in your neighborhood? Among college-educated whites, 97%. 97% said yes. That is a remarkable number. And it tells me that in certain parts of this city, Chicago really is working, to use the old phrase. It's doing what it's supposed to do. It's attractive that the kids are coming in. They're liking what they're seeing. But among of that 97%, 83% strongly held that view. But among black people, only 48% said they strongly believe that they want somebody to live in their neighborhood. And among Latinos, 41%. Is Chicago a good place to find a job? White people, 86%. Hispanics, 72%. African Americans, 57%. That tells you what the new mayor has got to do and what I'm looking for in a candidate. I don't want somebody who's going to kill the golden goose and say, screw downtown, we're going to take it all away, we're going to move it all out here, because that's a recipe for disaster. What I'm looking for is somebody who can keep what's there going, but get it out to more people.
Thank you, Greg. Mays.
So thank you for the opportunity. My name is Mays Jackson. I'm with WVON. And so we provide a unique perspective. We really focus specifically on the issues that impact black people. And so when we start talking about this position of mayor, we dance around it politely. But the fact of the matter is, this happens to be one of the worst places in the country for black people. And so as we look out in the audience and we're all talking about how wonderful it is, and I'm going to tell you that I participate in the largesse of the city, I think we have to have a mayor that is willing to tackle the tough issues that are going on in our community, in the black community specifically. And so, you know, I think when we look at this, everybody is going to want to have a politically correct discussion, and they're going to want to talk about it in a genteel manner as people are dying on the south side of Chicago and on the west side of Chicago. I think we need, and I'm going to tell you that I honestly believe that this is black people's last stand in Chicago. This was at one point the Mecca for black people anywhere in the country. Black people from all over the South came to Chicago to participate. At one point, Chicago had the largest concentration of black millionaires in the country. This was where, Harlem was not where black America came from. It came from Chicago. That same MPC study that you talk about says that during the Harold Washington era, black people were at a peak of approximately 1.2 million people. If we continue on these trends, we will be at approximately 600,000 black people by 2030, half of our peak population. This election, the next two elections, are probably the most important elections to black people specifically in this country, in this city, probably for the next 20 years. You think about it. This next mayor is going to decide the map, right? They're going to decide this brewing brouhaha between the black and Latino community over representation. It's going to come to a head under this administration. How many black wards will be? And I think that as I talk to my listeners on a daily basis, and I know that, you know, in our world, we have to be politically correct. But for my community, we are very rapidly being pushed out of the city of Chicago. And any mayor that is not willing to address our issues head on, I think is going to be the problem. And so I think one of the biggest issues this election is who's going to be willing to take on the challenge of dealing with the black community and acknowledging it straight up.
Thank you, Mays. Remember, Blue Forms, we've got some questions coming. Let me ask you, each of you, something, though. I'm curious about your opinions here on this. And it's actually one of the questions that's come up that has been handed to me. How does what's going on outside of the actual race for mayor, particularly the Van Dyke trial, for example, how do forces outside of the actual whatever the candidates are saying affect the potential outcome? Because in that case, the Van Dyke trial is going to bring to light some unflattering things about, you know, some of the candidates. What would you say about that?
Well, I'm not sure. I think that the Van Dyke trial has been fascinating to watch, and we've got at least another week of testimony. I think that what you're hearing about the Van Dyke trial is nothing new in terms of the revelations that in terms of how the police department handles folks on the street, encounters with people like Laquan McDonald, the fact that the department was very ill-equipped to handle this and many other cases in terms of finding ways and strategies to not let these situations escalate to the point where someone's life is lost. The police officers and how they conducted themselves. We have several police officers, at least one Van Dyke's partner, who's actually under indictment himself in terms of how he handled himself in the aftermath of that case, even though he's serving as a witness for Van Dyke last week. So I think that a lot of the issues that are on the table in that trial were already part of the conversation,
yeah,
and part of what African Americans are just in particular talking about in terms of their feelings about how they're treated by the police department and by the city administration. So I don't think that that's going to change in any way that's already out there. The other issue I think that's outside and also part of the conversation is what they're calling the blue wave, the fact that there's a perception that the progressive politics are on the rise, that the Bernie Sanders brand of politics is on the rise, and that creates an opportunity for a more progressive candidate to ride that wave. And I'm not quite sure that I think that that's the case, mm-hmm, but I think that's one of the elements that would come from outside politically that might have an impact on this race.
Great.
I think the Laquan McDonald situation and the Van Dyke trial is just at the center of so much of what's going on, and offers both the potential but yet a good inside look at what ails us. I think the McDonald situation is one of the reasons Manuel decided to quit. This town could go up, and there could be a lot of problems if he walks, if Van Dyke walks, despite that tape. I hope that's not going to happen. I'm not on the jury, so I can say that. When I talk to the mayor, he says, "You know, what my life is like now. The last thing I do before I go to bed, and the first thing I do when I get up is I check my computer." Or I check my phone to see how many people have been shot and killed overnight. You don't think that takes a toll on your soul? And after 8 years of that, he didn't want to do it again, and I kind of understand why. But it has to be dealt with because clearly we haven't found the solution. And when I talked about balance here, God knows, we have to have police. There are bad guys out there, and they have to be controlled. And if there weren't police to catch them and a court system to judge them, we'd be in a much worse trouble than we are now. But they're not. The police are not like liege knights from the Middle Ages where they can go out and do whatever they want. There has to be discipline. There has to be rules, if only because the police need the community to cooperate with them. We have these terrible clearance rate on murder rates because nobody's in the community wants to cooperate with the police. They're scared of the guns. They don't like scared of the gangs. They don't like the cops. Whatever. They're not cooperating. Well, the police have to have the back of the community to be able to do their job. But at the same time, the police have to think that the community's got their back, too. This is a dangerous job. I mean, cops do get shot at. They get killed. There are a lot of reasons why crime is as bad as it is in Chicago. There are plenty of guns out there they have to worry about. So what you need is somebody who can find the right balance of assuring the cops, but also assuring the citizenry that the cops are doing the right thing. That's one of the balance tasks that the next mayor has to deal with. I know it's not going to be easy.
Mays, there's a question here for you from Augustus Cage. Mays, how would you recommend to the new mayor how to provide more equity for black people?
So how do we provide more equity for black people? I think let's go back. I think that when we think about the set-aside programs, when we think about the, 20 and 10 in Chicago? I'm not exactly sure what the number is. But 26? 26 and 6. All right. Thank you, Alderman Burnett. 26 and 6, which is the minority participation number that each project or we're supposed to participate in. Now, when we talk about when that program or when these programs were initially created, they were created to make to really bring equity to black people, descendants of slaves, and Native Americans, people who have been disenfranchised systemically. What you now see is that those programs have now been dominated. They actually over-index for white women, and then you see Asian, and then you see Latino, and then you see black. And then what happens is when you come to present to your crowd or to your audience and everyone wants to feel good about their minority participation, the fact of the matter is the black part of that minority participation is now only at 2 or 3%, and you're seeing everybody eat into that. So what I would tell the next mayor is he needs to come up with a program that ensures equity for the black people that the programs were initially created for. And then if you want to do something for white women, if you want to do something for Asians, but it's almost unfathomable to me that some of our largest engineering firms, et cetera, can say we have, they can be up to 50% on a project. And then when I go and look to see how many black people are actually participating at a partner or an equity level, you see little to nothing. So I would tell the mayor that he needs to re-examine the programs that have been put in place.
Mays, if I might, I'd like to see a broader brush. Minority contracting is important, but it's only a relatively small part of the Chicago region economy. I think if you're going to really help people who need jobs who don't have them, you have to pitch. You have to be worried more about than somebody got the right percentage of the contract to build a new sewer line. You got to look at what's happening in the broader economy, and that's where I think there's the emphasis ought to be.
So the city contracts in every fathomable piece of whatever business, they buy paper, they buy garbage cans, they participate in everything that could possibly be bought. Now, what I would suggest is that in our neighborhoods, right, in the black neighborhoods, we are not participating even at when we, again, if I drive down King Drive, Martin Luther King Drive in any city, county, state is a black place. If I drive down it right now and see who's actually working on the roads and the contracts that are putting their communities back to work, we're not, those companies and businesses are not coming to the government saying, hey, put us back on. They make millionaires in their community, and then they hire their own people. We then wind up coming back asking for programs as compared to business. Again, if you think back to Chicago when we were in the 70s and 80s, or 70s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, when Bill Dawson and we were getting our equity, there were enough black millionaires in town that Johnson Publications, all of these businesses that beget other businesses that created the employment in our community, and we didn't have to go outside as much.
I hear you, and you're absolutely right that more needs to be done. But I think that part of what Greg is saying is the economy has changed in terms of what the structure of the economy is and what jobs are needed and what jobs are available. I'm not excusing anything that the administration has done and hasn't done, but there's more tech.
Does the city use tech?
Government.
Does the city use tech?
Pardon me?
Does the city use tech?
Sure.
So are we equitably treated in that business?
But like Greg says, that's all well and good. That's just a small part of the city's economy. Rahm has spent a lot more time celebrating new businesses that come, to relocate, that come back from the suburbs, that come from other parts of the country. And where they all locate, they all locate pretty much downtown Center City. And I think that's an area which is not about government subsidies. It's not about government contracting. It's about private industry. I'd like to see a mayor who's going to be focusing more on the communities that really need that economic development and jobs when they're bringing companies back into the city.
I'm going to take a step back here with the next question from Dion Martin, or perhaps it's Dion Martin, from the Quebec government office. Looking ahead to the next mayor, what should the role be of Chicago on the global stage?
Can we fix home first? Right? And I think that's a big chunk of what Mayor Emanuel's problem was. I think that I think that Mayor Emanuel was a global mayor. And when I talk to clients or business people, they say, man, he was the greatest thing ever to business, as they go to their homes in the suburbs or they go up to their ivory towers. I think when we think about this, we really have to think from the standpoint of, does our mayor care about what's happening literally on the south side of Chicago? Does he know the people in the communities? Whether you liked Mayor Daley or not, you knew he cared about Chicago, right? You knew that he cared about the flower pots and the neighborhoods that he drove through, etc. I just feel like our mayor was detached. And so that we talked about so much global, we're a world city, and we lost, like the grass, we lost our ground floor.
I'll agree in part, but I think the honest answer is you need both. Chicago's role in the economy and where it's been growing jobs and where it seems to be positioned to grow jobs is as an international service center that competes with the likes of Paris and London and Rome and New York. That's our role. But you also have to take care of the people you have, and indeed you have to care about them. You need both. It's not an either-or situation. I can't talk about your neighborhood. In my neighborhood in Lakeview, I don't live too far from Wrigley Field, 90% of the population works downtown at some of those global companies. They're real people. They have real jobs, and they're Chicagoans.
And when you go south and that unemployment is at 50%, those people are not working downtown. I think there should be a balance,
The trick is to bring some of that balance, to spread that wealth. That we agree on.
Mm-hmm. And Amazon would not have done that. We're not going to get it anyway.
Well,
but the Amazon development.
I think we can sort of dispense with this non-mayoral question, which is from Paul Pusateri. Greg, is Amazon coming to Chicago?
The smart money says that. Let me take a step back. The companies put out all these lists of stuff they want and whatever. If they follow what they say they're going to do, Chicago at least ought to make the short list, if there's going to be a short list. The smart money says that in the end it's probably going to go to Washington, D.C., where Jeff Bezos, who owns the company and is the CEO, lives, owns the much of the time owns the Washington Post, whatever. Frankly, this is an expression in the corporate world that when you figure out where the headquarters are going to be, the three factors of count and importance are where the CEO lives, where the CEO lives, and where the CEO lives. This all depends on Jeff Bezos and what he wants to do. But if you look at the criteria they laid out, Chicago has all the assets of those other cities, but we're relatively cheaper.
Okay. okay. This is from Charles Gardner. What will be the impact of the November elections on the mayoral race? Anybody?
Well, actually, I would flip that question around in terms of what I wrote in the Sun-Times this morning, is that what will the mayoral race have, what impact will it have on the November elections? Because I think there's so much excitement and energy and interest around a race that's not even happening until the first round, until February, that it's kind of clouding out a race that's happening 6 weeks from now. The conversation, the media coverage, the energy has all been around what's next in the mayor's race, and I think that there's a lot of folks that are sort of become kind of complacent about the November elections, particularly here because we don't have a lot of highly competitive congressional. We have one or two congressional races in the Chicago area that are somewhat competitive. There's a perception that J.B. Pritzker is so far ahead of Bruce Rauner, and polls reflect that you know that's a no-brainer, and so maybe we don't even have to worry about turning out on November 6th. Those elections or midterm elections are always lower turnout anyway, and I would posit that there's some complacency and some sort of laziness out there in terms of how we're thinking about the November 6th campaigns and elections. And if I were running the Cook County Democratic Party in particular in Chicago, where all the action seems to be now in the mayor's race, I'd be worried about that.
She got too much on her hands, though. She running the party, running for mayor, and running for county board president.
As I pointed out, she's got to have her eyes in a lot of places. And she's probably going to have her biggest target on her own race.
Exactly. And so where does that leave? You would have to ask the rest of the people, where does that that leave them?
What do you think? Where does that leave them?
You know, I think it's going to leave a lot of people fending for themselves. I do think that you hit it on the head. We actually talked about it this morning. There is absolute, I keep saying, guys, there's a gubernatorial race, and I tell you that the governor's race is just as important as the mayor's race, because those maps, once again, are going to be approved. And where does that leave us? Now, that bodes well for Democrats. But I also think that if just to go back to the question, I do think that if J.B. Pritzker is elected governor, he will have a big pool to assist someone with if he makes a decision. And I do think he kind of owes Tony Preckwinkle a little bit.
I think he owes Tony Preckwinkle. I think you're onto something. I'd color that poll green, because I think that's what the next mayor is going to be looking for. Assuming Mr. Pritzker wins, and you can't call the selection quite yet with 5 weeks out, but man, Bruce Brown is going to have to show me something I haven't seen yet to make this even close at this point. The next mayor is going to go down to Springfield and stick out his hand and say, what can you do for schools? What can you do for pensions? You want to graduate income tax, or you're going to get the local distributive share back. The city really needs money, and that's one of the great places to get it.
All right. Next, Mark Weiermuller. Two very interesting questions. One, which candidate will lower my property taxes?
None.
Next question.
Move on.
And second question, why is there no Republican candidate?
It's a nonpartisan election. Simple.
And this is Chicago.
Right.
They strongly discourage Republicans from running, and they're pretty successful.
And some people would say that lifelong Democrat Gary McCarthy really is a Republican.
Okay, moving right along. Jeannie Cole, is there someone who has not declared that any one of you wish would run?
So, you know, he has pump faked us quite a few times, but I would love to see someone like a Larry Rogers get into the race. Someone who is, you know, he's well spoken. I don't think I can say articulate anymore. He's a lawyer. He presents well. And I think he really connects with people on all levels. And I think he would really maybe change the dynamic, particularly because I do think that we are looking for, I know I personally am looking for a black candidate for mayor to be able to support.
And you don't, does that imply you don't support any of the ones that are in the race now and would not?
I got a heavy diet. I'm turning into a diabetic, so no sugar.
Oh, shit.
It requires a lot of the candidates lack. You know what? I think that what the problem is in the black community, we keep coming with candidates that almost but not enough, right? They have a piece, but maybe there's something not there. I think Larry Rogers might be someone that gives us kind of the whole package.
Okay. Victor Dixon from Safer Foundation. If the ultimate winner only receives 20% or less in the initial election, will this person have the legitimacy to lead the city?
Well, under the rules, the top two winners in the primary, or in the first round, assuming nobody gets 50% plus one, go into to a general election, and if there's only two names on the ballot, in theory, this is Chicago, strange things happen sometimes, but in theory, somebody ought to get 50%.
Yeah.
There's your legitimacy.
You mean on the second term?
Second.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. But I guess the implication of the question is that going in, that person will not have clearly the support of anywhere close to the majority of the city.
That's why I say that this is an election unlike any we have really seen in this town in a very long time, because somebody's going to have to assemble a whole new, brand new coalition in 6 weeks, because you have multiple African American candidates, you have multiple Latino candidates, you have multiple business candidates, you have multiple populists out there. Somebody's going to have to all of a sudden try to appeal to all of them and put together a working majority.
Mm-hmm. Maze?
I agree.
Dwayne Deskins, of the candidates in the race, who best understands issues of urban violence? And has that person articulated a plan to address urban violence?
I think it's too early to answer that question. I think that there's really no sitting elected official in Chicago right now who really has understood or embraced the solutions to urban violence. If there were, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in right now. So I think that that really remains to be seen. And I think that we have to remember that a mayor is not going to solve urban violence. Any mayor is not going to solve urban violence. We need to have a lot of cooperation. It's a great point out. We need to have cooperation from the community, from the police department. We need to engage community organizations and nonprofits and schools and the entire social network out there to be able to solve this problem. You need someone at the top who has the leadership skills who can bring those folks together. But it's a big problem, and a lot, everyone is going to have to embrace it.
You know, I'll tell you I agree with Laura. I don't know who it is yet, but there's an equally difficult and related and almost intractable question, and that's what's to do with Chicago Public Schools. The facts are there are 100,000 fewer Chicago Public School kids than there used to be. The fact is also, though, that there are huge fights over whether resources are being fairly distributed or whether they're being overly concentrated in certain areas. We need almost certainly less schools, because a school that's empty doesn't serve anybody, just wastes money, but we also need a fair distribution of the money. Who can work that out in such a way as to appeal to people without offending large groups? Don't know yet.
You know, I think the issue of urban violence, I think right now, particularly again in the black, I think no one really wants to confront it. I think if you try and tackle it, and it is a multifaceted issue, you get in trouble, right? Because if you talk about, there's multiple components to it, right? There are family things that have to be done, but again, there are also schools. It's a whole, in my estimation, a network that has fallen apart. Now, we concentrate it, we talk about it from the perspective of urban violence, because that's kind of the, you know, it talks about the South and West sides, as we like to say. But when you talk about the breakdown of what's happening in our society, whether it's violence, whether it's opioid usage, whether there's just so many different components. And I think that fundamentally there has to be a mayor that can talk to people without offending them and really start to bring people together. I think that everything that we've seen thus far has been divisive, where people are going in their separate ways. I think that the person that does it has to bring us together from the standpoint of saying, hey, this is all of our problem. We've all got to be a part of the solution.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. Kathleen Cleary Powers. Can you comment on the importance of a positive working relationship between the Chicago Teachers Union leadership and the future mayor?
Ooh.
I think that would be a wonderful thing. I think it's very challenging. It's very challenging because, for some of the reasons that we've just discussed, the interests collide. The Teachers Union is a union. They're there to protect their members. That is their number one priority, and they're to protect their turfs. A mayor has a lot of interests that he or she has to protect and cultivate, and I don't see them ever being in the same place.
Amen.
Does the mayor have to protect who has to protect the students in this process? Right. I think that the thing that seems to get lost between the teachers union and the mayor are the students. So when you think about the fact that 1 in 4 black kids is destined to go to a failing CPS school, I think that has to be addressed. So I just think, like, the two of them have to come together and start putting the kids first. And I think if they put the kids first, I think they'd find common ground and people could work together. The other thing I would suggest for the new mayor is not to call up the president of the CT union and tell him F you. That might help them go a long way.
That's a wise approach.
Hey, Lewis, F you. Ah, well, that's not going to end well.
Well, of course, to be fair, the mayor, that's probably not the only person he's had made that phone call.
Let me tell you what. But let me advise him, don't do it to a sister. Please don't.
Yeah, so many would say that the Chicago Teachers Union leadership is all about the adults and not the kids, right? And some would say if the mayor closed 50 schools, he should have gone bigger and closed 100. If you're going to do it, why not right size, right?
Well, when I was talking about the new mayor, I'm looking for the candidate who can bring balance. That's kind of the balance you need. You referenced it pretty well. Laura is right. The Chicago Teachers Union has a legal, moral, fiduciary responsibility for its members to get them what they can, and anything that's done for good for kids is not their top priority by definition. Now they, I'm sure the teachers union would argue that, hey, having a good, content workforce that's motivated and well trained or whatever, it's good for us, it's good for the school children. That's true to some point, but there were big differences, as you recall, over whether to extend the school day. There were big differences over whether to put more money into pensions or put the money instead into hiring more teachers. I think the teachers union makes some reasonable arguments that, why do most schools, particularly minority areas, not have librarians? That would seem kind of fundamental.
I think we know the answer to that.
To good education. So there's some room to negotiate here, but ultimately they have slightly different roles. Hopefully they can work together most of the time, but it's not going to be that way all the time.
All right. Paul Colgan. Will we see a rerun of council wars under the new mayor with a majority of aldermen jockeying for the agenda?
I think it depends on who the mayor is, right? I think if it's a person who put together a coalition and was able to kind of start locking down the aldermen early, starting to find out what their wants and needs were and started assuaging them, and they saw that they could, they wouldn't lose, or their wards wouldn't lose, then I think you might be able to see the end of council wars. But I think if you get an establishment person, someone who gets the game, then I think they will probably be able to put everybody together. I think if you get someone, and I'm going to say someone whose whole job is to blow up the city, is to blow up the structure, then I think is when you'll start to see council wars, because you'll start to see people who know how to play the game a lot better than someone who may be less experienced.
I would hope not. The last thing we need is to go back to Beirut by the lake and some of the true ugliness that occurred when Harold Washington was mayor, and the majority of the city council for a while refused to give him the time of day. That's not good. I don't expect the same kind. If there is a renewal of council wars, I don't expect it's going to be on a racial basis. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be more on a philosophical basis. For instance, a populist group could easily gain a majority, control the city council. What if they decide to get really serious about rent control or electing a school board? There could be some pretty good fights over that.
I guess I would just add that it would be nice to have a few more independent thinkers in the Chicago City Council than we have right now. And I think that there's some hope for that, partly because everyone was terrified of Rahm. And Rahm was a unique mayor, and his style was unique, and his way of doing business with the city council was unique. And I don't think anyone else is going to ever be able to inspire the kind of fear in city council members that he did. I think that there's some eagerness among some of the aldermen to be able to be more independent and exercise a little bit more to be more engaged, to be able to have more of a voice. So, and if we have some debate and we have some dissension in the city council, it doesn't have to be a war, but I think that's a good thing.
Can I touch on that, though? Because I don't necessarily think that Rahm was like a terrorist to the alderman. I think Rahm was a person who understood how to work in Congress, so he understood a legislative body. Mm-hmm. And I think what he did was he figured out how to co-opt people. he figured kind of what they wanted and what their needs were and said, hey, let's make a deal. And I think that he has the ogre mentality when it comes to the people. But I did think that he was a wheeler dealer when it came to his alderman and he negotiated. Mm-hmm. I think that was more of, and I think even when you talk about Mayor Daley, I mean, when you think about how many libraries and how many schools and things got built, a lot of times those were trade-offs for things that got done. And so oftentimes I think when we're in the media, well, I came from a political background, so I see it from kind of two different lenses. One, which is the media, which is everything is kind of nefarious. But on the flip side, politics is about the deal, the art of the deal.
I think Mays makes a very, very good point. I agree with it. But I also agree with Laura that aldermen sometimes go too cheap, if I might.
That I can take care of.
You know, a mayor's got this whole goodie bag of stuff he can offer in exchange for the right vote at the right time. Most aldermen, by inclination, don't want to fight anyhow. They just want to do stuff out in their ward. Yeah, you play the political game, and yeah, you can do, but if you really believe in something, you ought to stand for it.
So let's stick with city council for a minute, because the mayor's race is one thing, but all 50 are up. So with Rahm departing and a new mayor coming in, what does that city council look like next round? Is it going to change significantly?
You know, it could, but who knows? I mean, I haven't looked at all 50 wards, and if to the extent I have, it's before Rahm decided not to run. I mean, there are all kinds of strange things going on, I'll tell you that much. I've written a fair amount about how the Rickett family has spent a small fortune trying to demonize Alderman Tunney from the 44th Ward because he wouldn't roll over on all the stuff they wanted. My suspicion is there's lots of little things like that occurring in wards all over the place. We just don't know about it yet.
Yeah, I think the city council is going. I think that there'll be, as always, a buzz. I think what you've got to look for is how many people are going to retire, right? I think that is really what. I don't know how many people would be unseated. I think when you look at some of the contested Latino races, that's where you might see a lot of volatility. But I think the rest of it is you've got to look at if there's going to be a retirement and a vacuum created. Who goes into that spot? Now, one of the things that I've noticed is once someone goes into that spot, right? No, it's very hard to be the standalone one alderman who is by yourself while everybody else is moving forward. And so you kind of get indoctrinated into the system, and then you start to see a bigger picture, which is it's about kind of my ward. So I would look at the retirements more than I would look at people just getting unseated, although there will be some interesting races like that.
Before we get off the subject, can we say something about the current city council? If Emmanuel decides to proceed with his $10 billion pension obligation bond, that issue's kind of disappeared since mm-hmm. he withdrew, but I think he's really inclined to do it. Man, I hope this city council does its job. It just holds that sucker up to light, looks at it up and down and whatever for about 3 months before they decide.
Now that you will see, I think you'll see a lot of people being more independent. I don't think he'll be getting 50-0 anymore. I think you'll see some dissension, and I think you'll start to see, as we see at the legislative body, people taking votes that they can use for mailers and for ads and for campaigns.
And votes that could be used against them if they don't go the right way.
Exactly.
People have not forgotten about the parking meter debacle, and that's something that I think that may inspire what Greg says, that people are going to really be taking a close look at that deal.
All right, we've got a couple more questions. Andrea, looks like Rayla. Would a mayoral candidate be likely to get the progressive vote if he or she supports the term limits binding referendum?
Well, the term limits binding referendum probably isn't going to make it to the ballot. It's got run into all kinds of legal problems, and it could survive, but I doubt it, which means that, let's assume somebody is elected mayor, and like all public officials, they immediately start thinking about the re-election. They're going to want to limit themselves a term or two down the road? Probably not. So it's something to talk about, but I wouldn't bet your lunch that it's going to happen.
Concurrence.
Agreed.
Okay, this is a more of a point of information question from Georgia Lease. How many people do you think will be on the ballot ultimately, and is there a limit? There's no limit to how many people can run, no. But how many people, what's your candy camping on that?
I wouldn't be shocked if we hit 10, you know, this is a case where normally I don't believe in particularly high obstacles to getting on the ballot because it's kind of anti-democratic and it keeps people off who want to be on. But in this case, it's kind of a testing ground for who's real and who's got some real oomph behind them. I mean, to get on the ballot, at a minimum, you need 12,500 signatures, which means you really need 25,000. The rule of thumb is 2-1. You have to have at least a semblance of a decent organization to collect 25,000 signatures. But I would not be shocked if we hit 10 by the end.
Not only they had to be 12,500, but they had to be 12,500 unique signatures. If someone signs your petition, that person cannot sign another petition for another candidate. And that offers other problems, other obstacles if people want to challenge them. My bigger problem with the ballot, and this is not exactly the same thing that you're talking about, is the candidates that are running for two different offices at the same time. I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago, and particularly mentioning Tony Preckwinkle, Susana Mendoza, and Chuy Garcia. Two of those folks are not in the mayor's race yet, but these are all three of these people are running for other offices, and so they're basically saying to the voter, I'm standing before you asking for this job now, but in 3 months I might be wanting to ask you for another job. And I find that to be, as a voter, I find that to be offensive, and I'm just wondering, is it just me?
No.
How many other people in this audience find it offensive? Most of you don't. I guess that's just politics.
Yeah.
So can I, just on that note, the thing that concerns me about whatever the number is, and Greg, let me say, if I was handling the challenge, you'd need about 36,000 signatures. Oh, you need more than 25. But what I would say is that the thing that concerns me about this situation is that, will we get to hear from the candidates, right? So if you think about the attorney general's race that we just had in the primary, there were 8 candidates on the stage. And with 8 candidates on the stage, you get one question, hello, my name is, and by the time it's done, it's over because it's an hour debate, you never got anything, and now you're making decisions based on what I think someone might be. And so that is the biggest concern I have about the quantity of candidates.
Well, I think you're right, Mays. I remember, and I think Mike Quigley pointed this out in Lynn Sweet's piece this morning, that when Rahm Emanuel's seat became vacant and Quigley ran, there were about close to 20 candidates in that race, and the forums were just impossible. But mayoral forums and particularly debates, I don't think are where people are going to get their best information. We had a debate last week in the governor's race, a televised debate in prime time, and the numbers that I saw, it was something like 70,000 people watched it. So I think people don't watch those debates because they don't expect to get much in terms of real information or be able to use that information to distinguish the candidates. I think they're going to have to get it from, unfortunately, for the most part, from media coverage and from advertising.
And social media, which a lot of people are using because they're going directly to their constituency as compared to having their messages filtered.
Okay, this is our last question from Tom Donovan. Would each of you predict which two candidates will face off in the runoff? Anybody?
I think that, and I would not predict at this point, just because I think that you'd have a lot of egg on your face. I don't think that we've seen who all is in the race yet, and we don't see what deals are being made. Like right now, if I were to bet, there are people that are cutting deals right now that you might be placing bets on, for instance, who are going to get out as the kingdom starts to get cut up.
So I would agree with that. I think some of these folks got in the race with the intention of cutting deals. Some of these
leverage.
Are not serious candidates to begin with, and until you know who's in and who's serious, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, that's great cover. I'm going to use it.
Does that mean you agree?
I agree.
Okay. Well, listen, thank you so much for your thoughts today. Let's give our panelists a round of applause.
Wow.
Thank you.